I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go into the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Right, welcome to a special edition of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the one and only podcast for the UK Seahawkers. With the just slowly but surely settling on the London game announcement earlier on this week, myself, we are lucky enough to be joined by one of the writers for Seahawks.com, Mr. John Boyle. How are we, sir?
I am doing great. I'm excited to come visit you guys eventually here. Got to wait a little while, though.
Yeah, just a little while. So before we get into all the London stuff, how did you end up at Seahawks.com? And were you a Seahawks fan?
I'm from the area. Yeah, I'm from the area. So I was, you know, I was a fan as a kid, and then I got into journalism out of college. So I was a sports writer, and I covered the Seahawks for one of the local newspapers out here for a while, and then ended up jumping over to the team side when someone retired who worked for the team website. So been covering the team since 2009 and grew up in the area, so familiar with the team my whole life.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's probably a similar story with other people over here in my generation. The one annual way of getting information was from Claire Farnsworth when he's back with the PI.
Yep.
So obviously, on
to okay.
Well,
so you guys
well,
know
so.
Claire, yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, so Claire, yeah, his retirement was my good fortune. He stepped aside, and I jumped at the opportunity to fill his big shoes.
Yes. So what's it like covering the team in such like close proximity? It's been compared to when you were working for the newspaper.
Yeah, it's been good, and a lot of it's the same, you know, especially the kind of weekly, you know, press conferences, practice, all that, going, you know, sitting in the press box at the games. But, you know, the fun thing about working on the team website is you get some access that you wouldn't as a traditional member of the media. You know, I think about, like, at the Combine, they let me sit in on some of the interviews with players or, you know, and I've been sat in the draft room for parts of the draft the last couple of years, things like that. So there's definitely some perks to working on the team side in terms of access.
Yeah, cool. So how, obviously it's been a pretty busy few days, pretty active for yourself and obviously the team on the website with all the coaching changes. And obviously with this today, how long, I mean, obviously might be able to dial too much information, but how long has this been a consideration or a chance of the Seahawks coming over? Because it seemed for so long the travel was the biggest bugbear and the biggest thing holding it back from happening.
Yeah. You know, I never, you know, whatever conversations were going on with the higher up people about this, you know, in the league and all that was obviously kept secret. So I didn't know anything about that, but yeah, we just heard about it. You know, they gave us a little heads up so we could prepare stuff for the website and whatnot. And yeah, you know, the travel is a bit of a hindrance. You know, I think the time difference more so than the actual flight time, because we're talking about an 8-hour time difference. Yeah. So, but we all knew it was a possibility. Just you go back to the head of the NFL UK saying last year that the goal was to get every team there, and the Seahawks were one of the six that hadn't. So it certainly seemed possible at some point. And then you look at the teams they're playing, and you know the teams that are potential home teams in London this year. So we definitely knew it was a possibility, and you know there'll be some travel logistics that are tricky, but I think, you know, I know as people working here and fans and everybody's pretty excited just to see what it's like.
Yeah, there's been, I mean, before this year I made the trip 3 straight years over to Seattle, and there's people who've been making it for double figures, like 10 plus years every year as well. So it'll be a nice change for the team to come and come into our neck of the woods instead of making the trek. I mean, the 12-13
hours. I'm excited to see, you know, just talking to you guys, and I've had some contact with the German Seahawkers. I know we have a pretty big following in Europe, and you know, I do these pretty much weekly Q&As on Twitter with our fans, and it's, I swear it's almost every week a different fan is asking, you know, when are you coming to the UK? When are you coming to the UK? And I never had an answer for them. So I guess we have to retire that question from the Q&As, but it's pretty clear that there's a lot of interest over there in the Seahawks. So it'll be fun to get to come kind of interact with our fans overseas.
Yeah. So was it through that Q&A stuff that you first had any idea that there was a pretty full-on fan base?
I mean, I've seen a little bit just a little bit through our social media channels on, you know, Seahawks, Twitter and Facebook and all that. I was kind of new, but yeah, it's really been through, you know, when I'm putting out the ask for questions and I see how many people, you know, it'd be only one or two fans every week asking the question, but it was somebody different every single week. And it was very clear that there's a passion for it. And for whatever reason, I think it might be the military presence in Germany, having a lot of Americans there, but we have a ton of German followers as well. So it's pretty cool to see, you know, just how much following this team has built, especially in recent years with all the success.
Yeah. Yeah, well, one of the guys who was one of the big driving forces behind the UK guys, he passed away a few years ago, but he got the idea to form a chapter for the UK from the military guys over in the US, I think. So it's all been interlinked, and he helped and pushed the German guys as well, who are just flourishing on their own as well. So what was the 2017 season like for you covering the team? Obviously, it ended a lot earlier than that we've got used to, but was it any different covering the team this year than other years? Because obviously with all the injuries and different faces.
It was a season that just felt, you know, kind of difficult to ever get on track. They, you know, they did some good things. They played, you know, had a couple big wins. You look at the way they played against the Eagles and just looked phenomenal in that game. And, you know, they had their moments, but between the injuries and kind of the slow starts on offense, which I think obviously contributed to the changes we saw yesterday, but there were very few times in the season where you felt like they were just kind of on it and firing all cylinders. And, you know, I give credit to them for, with all the injuries they had, even be 9-7 was pretty impressive and all the struggles in the running game and everything. But it is odd, you know, that they've been to at least the divisional round every year since 2012. So it's a little weird to be talking about, you know, the season that was instead of the season still ongoing.
Yeah, it's very strange to have things to do on weekends in January, isn't it, after the last few years?
My wife and kids don't mind it too much, but it would be nice to be talking about a game this week.
Yeah, it would be. So what is your off season like covering the team? Because obviously it's pretty much 24/7, 365 league, isn't it, NFL? Did you get much downtime during the season?
I mean, little bits. You know, this is actually kind of one of the times between now and the new league year when that kicks off. And, it kind of gears up for me when we get closer to the combine, and then I'll be in Indianapolis for the scouting combine. Then the new league year, we get free agency draft, all that. So really, you know, this is sort of the slowest time between whenever the season ends and when the combine gets going. So there's, as we saw yesterday, though, there's always something going on, and it's, you know, the NFL, I'm sure much like the Premier League over there, there's interest in it 24/7, 365 days a year. So it's people always ask me, you know, who don't follow the NFL closely, oh, what do you write about when the season's over? And I always tell them there's plenty.
Well, the first reports of Darrell Bevell leaving broke over here, I think it's about 7:30 in the morning yesterday. So obviously because of the time difference, there was like this 7-8 hour lull where it was just like, we're waiting for something to happen. We're waiting for obviously more than one source to come through with it. It was quite strange because usually we wake up to the news, but instead, like, we go to sleep to news. But yesterday we woke up to it. It was quite strange. So what? Obviously, there's a lot of people, opinions and just conversations going on. But just see this being a busy off season for the Seahawks.
Yeah, you know. Sorry, you cut out there at the end. What was the end of your question?
So do you see this being a busy off-season for the team compared to others? Is it just going to be the same old...
It's going to be busy on the coaching front because we don't know if there's more coming yet or not, but that's already is significant of coaching overhauls we've seen under Carroll really since the first year when they changed offensive coordinators and brought both Cable and Bevell in 2011. It's, you know, just with those two, it's tough because, you know, they've they oversaw some of the best offenses this franchise has ever had. You know, they won a Super Bowl. They did a lot of good things here, but sometimes, you know, things for whatever reason go the wrong way, and the offense has struggled at times the last couple of years, and, you know, they're going to go a different direction, which that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And then, as we all know, there's, you know, there's a lot of contract situations coming up, whether it's guys who are free agents, you know, important players, Sheldon Richardson, Jimmy Graham, or you talk about, you know, we don't know who it's going to be yet, but there's inevitably almost any team, and especially a team with a lot of veterans make a lot of money, you get salary cap issues, and maybe some guys are, you know, whether it's released or traded, they're going to see change. There's always change in the NFL, but I think we might see a little more than usual.
Yeah.
You know, that being said, though, I sometimes hear people talk about, you know, the window closing and you know, rebuilding, all that stuff. And look, when you have a Pro Bowl quarterback in his prime and you have one of the best coaches and GMs in the league, you're set up for success no matter what else is going on.
That's pretty much what we keep trying to say to people, a bit more negative and a bit more downbeat about what's going to come in the next couple of years for Seahawks. So what is the locker room, the Seahawks locker room? Obviously you have the big voices, the big characters, and you have people like Doug Baldwin who have took on social issues the last couple of years, and Michael Bennett, obviously. What is that locker room like to be in? Is it like the iron sharp? Does the iron sharpen iron mantra come through when you're walking around the building, or?
Oh, for sure. You know, maybe that part is more on the practice field than in the locker room, but it's a really interesting locker room. You know, I've covered the team, like I said, since 2009, and the last few years, it's a really good group in terms of, you know, just both interesting personalities, but then also just really intelligent. You know, you mentioned guys like Doug Baldwin, Michael Bennett, guys doing really cool stuff in the community and trying to make their mark. You know, these aren't just athletes thinking about sports and nothing else. They're involved in some pretty serious real life issues. So it's been a really cool group. And, you know, just Richard Sherman, the character he is, Earl Thomas is, you know, one of the most wild, intense, just football crazy guys I've ever met. I love him, but he's just kind of a unique character, we'll say. So it's been a very, very fun few years to be around this team and just kind of see the different personalities emerge.
Yeah, well, we spoke to Michael Sean Dugar from the Seattle PI a few times.
Yeah.
And we said to him, the access that you guys seem to get from the players and coaches is completely different to what it is over here, because some sports over here, they only really talk when they're plugging a product, but we don't really see like Doug Baldwin taking the mic stand like he has a few times. So it is really refreshing, and from afar we are. It's something that, like, we can hang our hat on, that they're our players. Do you get that sense from the fan base over there and from their teammates as well?
Oh, for sure. I think that's an important part of, you know, not just this team, but the league in general and the success it has here, is that there is a level of accessibility to players. And it's funny you mentioned that. I had no idea really how things worked with the football clubs over there until we've had, you know, teams come over for friendlies. And when I've been in the media covering different teams visiting, it's, you know, they might do one press conference with a coach and two players, and that's the only access they're going to give to the media the whole time they're there. And, you know, maybe you get the mix zone after the game where you scramble to talk to a player. So I found that element of it interesting, of, you know, no open locker rooms, no post-practice interviews. So it's, you know, I guess the players there probably like that because there's less demands on them. But I do think the way it's set up in the, you know, for the sports in this country is really a big part of their kind of their accessibility to the fans to make them more relatable.
Yeah, it is really cool, because I think with most football clubs, the manager, say, has one day of availability. It's a day or two before the game, and that's it, really. Then you have like 5 minutes after the game.
Yeah.
It is quite refreshing. So as the topic of London and coming over here been anything mentioned by the players over the course of the season, or is that something you're going to have to get next time they're all in the building?
Yeah, I think that's more something we'll ask them when they're back. You know, the unfortunate part of this timing is we can't really talk to the players because they're not around. So, you know, it'll be interesting to hear what they say. You know, I think a lot of the guys will be excited about the prospects of, you know, some guys are more interested in seeing the world at this stage of their lives. Sometimes you get young guys who don't really appreciate the opportunity to do stuff like that until they're older. So I think there will be some guys, to be honest, who look at it as more of a travel inconvenience than a fun thing, but I think you're going to see other guys really embrace it. And I think, you know, Pete Carroll is such an optimistic guy. He's going to find a way to make any situation positive, and he'll probably try to get his team to embrace it. But, you know, I can certainly tell you the fan reaction has been good. And, yeah. You know, those of us fortunate enough to travel with the team for work purposes certainly look forward to the idea.
Yeah. Well, I saw that you joined our Facebook group earlier tonight.
I did. Yeah. I figured I'd join that so I can follow along and pick up some tips on what to do while I'm in London.
Yeah. As you might have saw, it was pretty much carnage straight after the announcement that, which about 4 o'clock our time, the announcement came down. And it was just your phone was mounting. The guy who's Sean, who's our president for the chapter, I don't think he's put his phone down since 4 o'clock. So it was quite a reaction. It is quite exciting seeing how excited people are at both sides of the thing. So what do you think that the contingency plan would be for the scheduling with the Seahawks? Obviously the bye week will come. Will it be an East Coast thing the week before, then make travel slightly easier, do you think, or is that too early?
I would think that might be the case. My understanding is a lot of times the teams that have to go to London, especially if it's a West Coast team, the league will work with them a little bit before putting the schedule together and kind of gauge their preferences. So if I had to guess, this is purely speculation, no insider knowledge here, but I would think that they might try to tack it to one of their, you know, they don't go all the way east to the East Coast this year, but they do go to, you know, they go to Charlotte, they go to Detroit, and they go to Chicago. Yeah. So all of those would give you both, you know, the time change difference of, you know, 2 or 3 hours, kind of getting acclimated a few days ahead of time and cut the flight down on the back end of it. So if I had to guess, I would think we would do that and then get our bye week afterwards. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see until we see the schedule in April, what the plan will be.
Yeah, I mean all the rest of it, the schedule will be April still with all this. It won't be any earlier.
Yeah, there's no, you know, the league doesn't give an official, they don't give an official schedule release date until right up to, I always like to joke, it's the announcement of the announcement. sometime in April, they'll put an announcement that the schedule is going to be released on the NFL Network, you know, two nights later. So I feel like it's usually a week or two before the draft. So I would look forward in April.
Yeah. So it's something we mentioned when we had Michael Shawn on. Were you dragged into the Techno Thursday movement this year?
I did not wear any shorts, but you know, Luke Wilson did try to convert media. You know, that was a good time. It was fun to see those guys having fun. I'm sure you'll saw that the video of practice where they did the little snake charmer thing, which was interesting. So, you know, this, again, going back to your earlier question about Logger, it's a pretty fun, unique group, and there's different factions of it, kind of how it plays out. Luke Wilson, Nick Vinette, Tanner McAvoy kind of tight end receiver group is a pretty goofy group at times.
Yeah, and didn't Tanner have Macklemore on his jersey, and he wasn't aware it had
Macklemore on his jersey? Yeah, and he didn't know. Yeah, he didn't know until somebody pointed that to him.
That's amazing. So, obviously are looking forward to the game, but there's always a fun possibility of Marshawn Lynch as well. What was he like to cover on a daily basis? Obviously, famously didn't want to talk much to the press, but
you know, he actually was okay with the media his first couple of years here, 2010-2011 season. You know, he'd talk. He's a really, you know, again, interesting locker room. He was one of the more interesting guys, and even when he stopped talking in the media, he was, you know, you'd just have small little interactions with him in the locker room that would be pretty funny. Some of them aren't repeatable, but you know, he was always a fascinating character to me, because even though we rub media the wrong way sometimes, you'd never find a player who had more respect in that locker room. And, you know, he's one of the few players that really could transcend positions and, you know, sides of the ball and position groups and all that, where, you know, you tend to get, you know, the defensive guys hang out the defensive guys or whatever. But he was a guy that could be tight with every single guy in every position group. And, he was a fun one both to watch and just to be around. And it'd be fun if he hangs on for another year in Oakland, just so we can get a little reunion in London.
Yeah, and obviously John Gruden's on the opposite sideline as well, which will be...
That'll be fun.
It's pretty much a pretty box office. I'll accept a no comment for the position you hold, but is a bit of player that has surprised you when you've thought one thing when he's walked in the building and been surprised by the actual person? You've spoke to him a few times, got to know him. Is anyone who's surprised you, or
trying to think of a good example of that. You're putting me on the spot here. You know, I won't say surprised me because I didn't have I've seen him since his rookie year, but I think a good example of that would be a guy like Richard Sherman. People who saw, I've talked to people who didn't cover the team early in his career when he kind of broke out in 2013 and had the Michael Crabtree stuff. And you see that kind of the brash, trash-talking guy, and that's such a small part of who he is. And, you know, when you're around him and you see, you know, just A, how, you know, he's a Stanford guy, how intelligent he is, but then stuff he does in the community through his foundation, everything. He's a guy that's much more complex than sort of the persona he put on in those early stages of his career. So that'd probably be the most stark example of kind of guys being a little different in person than who they are, you know, on TV and in games.
Yeah, I mean, it must be pretty cool to see a player like him, like, grow up as well, I guess. I mean, it's a weird way to put it, but he has kind of changed from the guy who walked in the building, what, 7-8 years ago, to the one who's on the sideline cheering on his team on a scooter, isn't it? I mean,
he's a guy that's always kind of taken on a coaching role, even as a player, and, you know, usually he was doing that while he was playing, but now he kind of took that on even more so because he couldn't play. And, you know, Pete Carroll's talked all year about how he, you know, every meeting he'd sit right next to Shaquille Griffin and work with him. And it's sort of become a rite of passage for any new cornerback who shows up in Seattle is they work with Richard Sherman after practice. He's working with them on technique and all that. So, yeah, I mean, not just Richard Sherman, but covering this team from the early parts of the Pete Carroll era where they really tore it down and rebuilt it, it's been fun to see. Yeah, you know, whether it's Earl Thomas, or, you know, Cam Chancellor, all those guys, Richard Sherman, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, just these guys come in as young rookies and kind of develop into the people they are now.
Yeah, and obviously, also you mentioned earlier that you go with the team to the scouting combine. There's a lot of not almost ridicule about the whole thing of the scouting combine by some, but what's it like? What is it like being in that bubble for those few days in Indianapolis?
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, sorry. I'll finish.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, it's a weird thing just in terms of like all the prospects being marched out there and measured in public. And that part of it's kind of odd, but you talk to the scouts and, you know, they want to see the guys work out and all that. But what's really important is those interviews to get to know guys.
Yeah.
They get most of the, you know, physical stuff, you know, the speed, whatever else. For the most part, the film tells them what they need to know. Sometimes they need to sort of confirm it with the measurements of 40 and broad jump and all that. But for the most part, the most valuable thing for them is to sit down with those guys and interview them. And then the medical part, I mean, that's really if you go back to the origins of the combine, it was a convenient way to get scouts together for physicals. All the team doctors would meet in one location and they'd bring them all in just to check out guys' health. And that sort of was the origin of the combine. And it's sort of grown into the monster it is today. But, I can't really divulge what's talked about, but being in those meetings is pretty fascinating. All the questions they ask and sort of the ways they're trying to get guys to, you know, I don't want to say trick guys, but they want to sort of push them a little bit and see how they respond. So it's those interviews are really fascinating.
Yeah. Is there more involved with it than you were aware, or is it as in-depth as you expect?
You know, it was a little different than I would have expected, but yeah, it's obviously pretty thorough, and they just the whole process, you know, spending kind of more behind the scenes time this year with them is the whole process of how they go about it was pretty interesting to see.
Yeah, and then obviously you obviously not divulging names, but then you see some of the names on the field on Sundays, not just in Seattle but across the thing. It must be quite strange, I guess, as well, isn't it? You've seen the guys sit in a function room across from you, and then they're on the field in Tennessee on Sunday. It must be.
Yeah, no, that's for sure pretty interesting to kind of, and you know, there's a few guys that were in that interview room that didn't end up in Seattle, and you know, they pop up across the league. I'm like, oh yeah, that guy. So, you know, it's pretty interesting. That whole process is a big part of the evaluation piece, and it's pretty cool to get to, again, a good part of this job compared to being in a newspaper. You get to see some stuff.
Yeah, cool. So I don't think, I mean, so all hands on deck before the trip over to London in October. Where can people catch all your on social media and stuff? Obviously, Seahawks.com. We'll have all your amazing, tremendous intros to, which I read your intro to the London thing out loud to my dad earlier.
That was so bad. I wrote that as a joke, and then some of my coworkers egged me on. What you read was actually the toned down version. I had about two more paragraphs for that, but I just...
It's always good when you get Rolling Stones and Beatles songs in the same sentence. So it's always good.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have, you know, obviously the website is kind of the main place, but people can, you know, all the usual social media. You can find Seahawks stuff on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. My personal Twitter account is at John P. Boyle. So that's kind of where to find us.
Cool. Yes. So before we go, just a quick roundup, because obviously not sure when we pod next with maybe the Seahawks hitting a bit of a lull the next few weeks. National Meet is filling up fast. Obviously, I have even more so after today's news. Just around 20 spots available. May 19th in Bristol at Toto's Wine Bar in Bristol, not in Africa. So the ticket information is all on the Facebook page, UK Seattle Seahawks fans, and on the website, which is ukseahawkers.com. John, a massive thanks for taking half an hour or so out of your day. I appreciate it's been a busy few days, busy week. And we look forward to hopefully crossing paths with you on the weekend in the centre of London.
Absolutely, yeah. We'll have to hit you guys up for some suggestions on what to see, where to eat, all that stuff. Well, maybe we'll work together on a little travel guide for our fans.
Yeah. Well, the guy who's been the go-to early is one of your guys who does podcast with, Adam. He's the London guy. He's born and raised down there. So I'll
perfect.
Point him in your direction. We'll hit him up. Cool. But yeah, massive thanks. Sorry.
One more question for you. What time of year does the next year's Premier League schedule come out? I'm going to want to try to hit up a game. So.
It usually comes out the second or third week of June.
Okay. I'll keep my eyes peeled. I figure there's enough clubs in London that on any given weekend there's going to be a game somewhere, right?
Yeah. Well, obviously you've got Spurs where the team are playing. They should be playing there by now. Yeah. Then Arsenal, Chelsea, and obviously there's
Palace. Yeah, there's a lot of them.
And then there's even like the lower league teams if you wanted to go and see what lower league English soccer is like. But yeah, there's plenty of... Yeah, the second week of June the schedule will come out. And then there's pretty much games Saturday, Sunday, and obviously some Mondays, but I figure you'll be back on the West Coast by then, won't you?
Yeah, I don't know what our travel schedule will be, so no. I'm guessing we'll be heading back pretty quick, but who knows. Alright, well, thanks for having me on.
Nice time. Thank you.
If you can reveal the first team, which will be our road team.
Gotta excuse me, man. I played soccer yesterday.
You're gonna be bending over. So that's the Seattle Seahawks. Seahawks have recorded six straight winning seasons, played in a couple of Super Bowls in that span as well. They are gonna be the road team taking on. There we are, the Oakland Raiders, a team that's played in five Super Bowls.
That is gonna do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 48 champions.